Hey, Blenders, on this week's episode of Real Blend, we have Christopher Nolan and John David Washington on as our exclusive interview. We are also going to do spoiler-filled conversation about Tenet, and we play hashtag Christopher Nolan Blend. Don't miss this episode.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 133 of Real Blend, a podcast that ordered its hot sauce an hour ago. My name is Sean O'Connell.
Best line in the movie.
I am the
there
managing
are like
director.
Eight listeners that are going to get that reference,
but they'll all think it's funny. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend, and your co-host, one of the three co-hosts of Real Blend. Nice to have you guys. Episode highlights. The New Mutants opened in theaters. Did anybody go? We are going to talk about Tenet in so many different forms, including spoiler reviews, but we will give you plenty of warning before we get to that point. And today, Christopher Nolan joins us for an exclusive interview on the Real Blend podcast, as well as with his leading actor, John David Washington. We got the two of them paired. We are thrilled to finally have Nolan on the show. But before we get to that point, let me introduce my other co-hosts. I'm going to start on Nolan's show with Nolan's biggest fan, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. Hi, Kevin.
I am honored to have that crown, but I do believe that we're all massive Nolan fans. This is such a huge deal that he's on our show. It's a monumental thing for us, and you know, as everyone knows, we've been saying Dunkirk at the end of all of our shows for the past 3 years. You know, Nolan is, in my opinion, the most innovative filmmaker of our lifetime, and just the fact that he's on our show is insane to me. I don't even believe it. And for people who out there who are like nerds about filmmaking and all this stuff like that, like, we get real geeky about IMAX and everything.
But I want to point out too, because this is important, you can listen to the Nolan and John David Washington interview without spoilers. We did not get into any specific spoilers about Tenet. I know that people are having a hard time necessarily getting to it. It might not be open in a theater near you. Obviously, a theater is the way to go see it. So this is something you can still enjoy and listen to all of us talking about the theater-going experience and some of the things he worked on in the movie without spoiling anything. We keep calling it our show. The other hour is Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago. Hi, Jakey.
Doing well. You know, it's so weird. I'm trying to think about why this particular Nolan interview, just this whole week feels different. And I think it's because when we've landed other big interviews in the past, we had a little bit of time to decompress. One, we were all in person for Quentin Tarantino and Joaquin Phoenix or whatever the case may be. And then we had time to decompress. In some cases, it was a couple of weeks between recording and getting it on the air. So we were kind of able to sort of, we just did this interview, 24 hours ago from recording this particular show. And so to have recorded it 24 hours ago and then have him be on the show today, it just feels like it hasn't, like, I almost need to get this show over with and let it come out and let people react. And then I feel like it's going to hit me that it actually happened.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. This was the interview that I didn't think was going to happen. Like, I genuinely, like, oh, because Nolan's a very hard person to get. He does not do a ton of press. This film has had a lot of pressure behind it, considering where we are right now in the world. The fact that we even got on a Zoom with Christopher Nolan and John David Washington to talk about this film.
He's seen the inside of our homes.
It's astounding.
Nolan knows what my dining room art looks like.
It's wild. And it is not any, we are so thankful that we got this interview. I hope everyone out there realizes, like, you know, Gabe made something, said something the other day I thought was interesting. Like, you know, we are all in a very privileged position to be doing what we're doing, right? Like, you know, we go to the movies, we get to interview our heroes. But I don't think any of us ever take it for granted. I mean, there is something absolutely mind-blowing about being able to say that we have Christopher Nolan on our show this week. So thank you to Warner Brothers. It's an honor to have him on.
Well, and I want to give a real quick peek behind the curtain before we get into the rest of the show. Everyone sort of has to realize the fact of this was a roller coaster ride of emotions, yeah. Because up until about 5 days ago, we weren't getting him. It wasn't happening. Then we were told it was happening, and then the next day we're told it's not. And then we had to get through the weekend.
We were told like 90 minutes before it was supposed to happen.
Yes.
That it wasn't happening. That it was we not were happening. Prepped. We were yeah. ready to go.
And we had done a 2-hour conversation the night before working out our questions. Then it was. Now, again, the reason it was moved was a very good reason, which we won't get into specifics.
Yeah. And
but.
Just schedules in general. Yeah. Schedules sort of fall apart. And that's why the hashtag if it happens is something that we've created, because we're mentally prepared for the fact that something we're super excited for might not happen, because things fall apart all the time. And Kevin has often said, usually with Tarantino, I'll believe it when it's, you know, 2 days after it has actually happened. And we let our guard down with Nolan.
We did.
We really thought it was going to happen. Yeah. And it went away. But then it came back.
I'm kind of the worst at that. I'm the worst at sort of ignoring the hashtag if it happens.
You really are. Jake.
I really
you
am.
Get all of us excited. All right. Plugs. Real Blend has not one but two YouTube channels that we would love for you guys to go over and support. Please subscribe to those channels. Turn on your notifications. One of them is the full show in visual form. You hopefully are watching it right now. The other is called Real Blend Clips. And in that one, we're pulling out specific bits from the show that you guys can share. Easily digestible segments. We have the interviews that we pull. So you're going to have Christopher Nolan and John David Washington on that one. So head over, give each of those two channels a like and a follow and all of that jazz. One other thing, too, that is new in the store. We have masks. We came up with masks. Gabe designed these. So if you're heading back
this
to
is theaters, so cool.
This is really cool because we are obviously a podcast that's dedicated to the theatrical experience. We are really excited about that a lot of people around the country are getting the opportunity to go back to theaters. On Monday, Kevin and Lauren went to go see Tenet. I heard from a lot of other people around the country who Tenet was their first screening back to theaters. And of course, above all else, we encourage everybody to be as safe as possible. You guys know what your threshold is. Only go if you feel comfortable doing it. Practice social distancing, but wear a mask. And we now have Real Blend masks that you guys can get. You can head over to cinemablend.com/shop. And $1 of every mask purchase is going to go to a nonprofit that helps feed children in need. So you need the mask. We encourage you to wear the mask. And now you know that if you purchase a Real Blend mask, you'll look really cool in it, but you'll also be helping out a really great charity. So, Kev, I'm sorry.
Quick question. Gabe and I have actually been to the movies at a normal showing for Tenet. And I was thinking that maybe later on in the show, Gabe, if you're cool with it, I'd love to mm-hmm. maybe break down our different experiences, because you had experiences on your end. Some people didn't have masks on. I had my experience. I think it would just be interesting to talk to the
listeners about
that.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
I went
that.
For New Mutants.
Exactly.
Too, yeah.
There you go. Exactly.
I can open that up too. I have something funny to share about that one also too, which didn't really go as well as I had hoped. But let's get to the weekly poll. So this is about as unfair as it could possibly be. We ran a weekly poll that said, which September release are you most excited for? And we included Tenet as one of the choices. So it buried Antebellum and Mulan with 85.4%.
We should have done what movie other than Tenet?
Well, blame Gabe. That's a Gabe quiz.
Well, okay, any other month in any other year, sure. Yeah. But I literally had like three choices to choose from. So
true, there wasn't a ton to go for.
He was stretching with other.
So
exactly.
I think a lot of people...
it was a challenge for you to come up with your own.
Other studios are paying attention to how Tenet does and whether people are going back and whether they're going to give it a shot. It's doing well internationally. I'm really curious to see how it does this week.
It was sold out
domestically.
Last night when I went.
Have we seen any... I know as of right now, as of this recording...
Monday nights?
It's those limited ones. But have we seen any numbers from Monday?
Not yet.
Too
not
early?
That I've seen. No, not that... Yeah, not yet. But... I'm looking ahead to October, which is Wonder Woman, and November, which is Black Widow, and No Time to Die put out a poster right before we came on the air.
I thought that was very interesting that they put out a poster. That's
still November. I got popcorn last night, and the person...
I saw that in your picture. That made me happy.
But the popcorn tub was the No Time to Die logo with the April release.
Oh, really?
That's so funny. Weird.
You better hope the popcorn wasn't from the April release.
I know, but it was so strange seeing the original April date on it. It was really weird, but popcorn was so good.
When I stepped down to my New Mutants screening, there was a Black Widow poster with May 1st, and I actually wanted to ask the manager if I could have that. It's like, can I have that, please?
That's a keepsake.
It's kind of a keepsake.
Often, whenever I was a kid, when I was in a movie theater, I would just ask an employee if I could have a poster, and they would go in the back and give it for me.
No kidding, really?
Yeah.
Like a charming little boy.
And I had a little cute little Southern accent, too. It's gone away.
Jake, you know what? Next time I see you, I'll put this out there now on tape, so that way it's real. When I used to work at an AMC when I was in high school, and I used to sell tickets, and I used to go up and beg the projectionist to either give me a 35mm print of a trailer or a poster. I know it's a bad movie, but I have Episode 2, the original Star Wars Episode 2 poster, theatrical, the teaser.
That's a good one.
So I'll give it to you next time I see you. It's the actual theatrical teaser for Attack of the Clones. I know it's terrible.
I have a question for you, because I know that you have the Kill Bill trailer on film. What did the theaters back in when they all used to use film? Yeah. What did they do with them when they were done? Did they send them back to the studio, or?
So when I would walk into like the projection booth, and there would be like a wall of like, you know, kind of like this, but it had like little sections off, and it was labeled for every trailer they had. I don't think they were allowed to give them to me. I think you have to send them back to the studio. Like the Kill Bill one, the one specifically that I have, ran on the Gangs of New York print. And it literally says, do not show this in any G or PG films. But I don't think I'm allowed to actually have it. I think those were supposed to be sent back to the studio. But I showed it to Tarantino for Hateful Eight. He could have been like, dude, why the heck do you have this? I'm taking this with me.
It actually leads to that is the coolest photograph of
I love that picture.
It's such an amazing picture because he's holding the film reel.
But he's doing it in such a cool, like, Tarantino way.
Oh, it's the best picture of the world.
And you putting it in black and white looks awesome. If you don't know what we're talking about, go find Kevin's picture. One of many pictures he has with Quentin Tarantino. But this one, he's holding that trailer that is stretched out the film. And it looks like a picture that he would take like for a promotional thing, like a magazine cover or something. Kevin just happens to be there like in the background of the.
We are we're vamping. I don't know why we're killing time. We have an interview to tease to with Christopher Nolan and John David Washington.
Who?
Ladies and gentlemen, the Real Blend Podcast offers you an exclusive conversation with Christopher Nolan. And listen, I know the one question we got more than anything else heading into this one is, did you get him to say Dunkirk? And listen, we certainly tried, and you can listen now to find out if it worked. Here's Christopher Nolan and John David Washington. Mr. Nolan and Mr. Washington, this is kind of aimed at both of you guys, but Mr. Nolan, we know how important it is for you to immerse your actors in an environment on the day of the shoot, putting them in zero G for something like Interstellar, leaning on sets to create the environments that you have imagined. I'm just curious how you immersed your actors in the concept of inversion, and what were some of the challenges that you guys encountered trying to do it on the day?
Well, I think the main challenge was one that I didn't foresee, but in retrospect was very logical, is that you can't intuit this inverted set of actions or this inverted world. I thought when I was writing the script there would be a point where I would be able to just intuit or just sort of visualize it. And I think one of the reasons that I find the concept fascinating is you actually need the camera to show it to you. You actually need the camera to show you what it is and allow you to experience it. So you can describe it to an audience, but they really need to come and see the film to see what it is. But that fed into the entire concept of how we could approach it from the actor's point of view. Because I don't know how it was for you, really, in the sense of certainly for me looking from the outside, it wasn't possible to sort of imagine what something was in reverse, which is why we used playback as much as we did. But I don't know if you were able internally to sort of feel it differently, or whether that was even possible.
Well, I think that the training process, you know, the learning these moves the way we did, and that sort of the physicality of it, trying to understand it from a physical level perspective, really helped me with the concept. And then having, you know, watching those playbacks in rehearsals really helped me with what it would be like in reality.
Yeah.
Like these, some of these moves, what they look like, because this is based in reality.
Yeah.
Like this kind of technology existing. So that really helped better grasp the understanding of what it is a punch would feel like inverted.
Right.
You know.
But it's, I think of any of the films I've done, it's the most, the biggest difference in terms of what's on the page to what's your experience watching the film. It's very visual. It's really based on the idea that the camera can literally show you time. And prior to the invention of the movie camera, there's no way of conceiving these things or looking at action backwards or speed it up or slow it down. Yeah.
You know, Mr. Nolan, I was telling you earlier during our television interview about the idea of seeing Dark Knight on 70mm IMAX for the first time, and that being the moment cinematic immersion changed for me. And I have loved your use of IMAX cameras in your career. It's I saw Dunkirk 6 times in 70mm IMAX. I wanted to talk to you about the innovations that you and Hoyte van Hoytema made with the IMAX camera this time around, getting it into smaller spaces, but also this idea that of the IMAX camera running in reverse. Can you talk about that as well?
Well, we when we first started looking at how we would apply the IMAX format to this material, one of our concerns is, you know, could you run these cameras in reverse? And it turns out you can, and if anything, they seem to run better in reverse. we had fewer mechanical problems and the rest. They really performed incredibly well. I think it was partly as a result of now with Hoyte having done 3 films in a row on these same IMAX cameras. Each time we're refining them, he and his crew and the engineers at IMAX and at Panavision, they're coming together to just make the equipment work better and better every time. And we've become sort of bolder and bolder with trying to find ways to just use them even in the more intimate moments of the film and, you know, really get them into the smallest spaces possible and get them into you know, trickiest locations and never really give up on that. And, you know, one of my favorite shots in the film, which is a bit of a throwaway, is the shot looking down at the bow from the boat where you see the waves running back.
Oh, yes.
That's the opening of Trailer 2. The opening of Trailer 2,
pardon me. Yeah. That was one where we were on this icebreaker and I sort of thought, let's try and get a camera out there somehow and stick it to the side of the hull. And Hoyte and Ryan, our key grip, I mean, they found a little porthole in the bow of the ship and built a track that we could just roll it out and then use a stick to sort of tip the camera down. Mm. It was very, it was a very, very complicated shot to get, but it's things like that that I don't think we would have dared to do with those cameras, when we were starting out with them on The Dark Knight. And we've just, over time and experience, you wind up using it as you would any other format, and that really frees you up.
What about Hoyte jumping in a turnstile, though, with the, like, following me, like, with the...
Well, yeah.
He's doing his own stunts, man.
This is true. He's doing his own stunts. Over these last 3 films, he's just taken that handheld approach to the cameras and really, yeah, exactly, as you're pointing out, just jumping into the turnstile behind you and whatever. He just... and on Dunkirk, there was a lot of just floating out there. You know, he and I just floating in water with a little, like a boogie board with the camera sitting on it. And just, because he wanted to break down, as he put it, the barrier between, you know, being above water, being below water. And in this case, he knew how important it was to us to just be with the protagonist all the time, looking over your shoulder, going through the situation with you. And he did an enormous amount of work with this remote head, this automatic head, so that we could mount the camera in the car with these guys and just shoot over their shoulders as they're actually driving, as John David and Rob are actually driving through the chase, and just really get in the car with them, you know, in the way that you would have in the 70s with like an IMO, you know, 35mm camera or something, just sat in the back seat. He was able to give us a technical approach to doing that with this giant camera.
Wow. Well, guys, there's such a great moment in the movie where the protagonist is sitting opposite Michael Caine's character, and he basically tells him, look, if you want to pull this off, You got to wear nicer suits, man. You got to, like, you got to, that's the only way you're going to be able to pull. And it's such a great moment. But I was just sort of curious for you, Mr. Washington, as an actor, for you, Mr. Nolan, as a filmmaker, what did you have to adjust about yourself in order to pull off this movie?
My eating habits to get in those clothes.
Little Pringles.
Yeah, which Chris caught me cheating one day. I mean, I can't, but it was crazy how he did. But we don't need to get into details. He caught me, though. We'll just say Pringles were involved, you know.
You can't eat just one.
Exactly. You get it. And they had these, so they had the paprika-like flavor. I've never seen those before in the States, so I had to get them, you know, in bunches because I didn't know if I'd ever have enough. So anyway, it was.
If the movie taught us anything, you already ate them, so you just had to do it.
It hasn't happened yet.
Listen, I got into the suits, all right? I got into them. We were fine. We were good. It worked out. between that and just a lot of the, you know, just all the costumes really, they really just brought the character to life for me. Just every day putting it on, putting your gear on.
Jeffrey did an incredible job. And the moment you're talking about is something I wrote in the script that's easy to write on the page and very difficult to pull off. It's like, you know, this Brooks Brothers suit that you wear. And then at the end, you know, and I'm saying to Jeffrey, it's like, yeah, Michael Caine has to sort of slightly make fun of his suit and get him in a nicer suit. But we still want him to look great in the scene. Right. And so somehow he managed to give you a wardrobe where it's like, you look fantastic through the whole scene, but then you kind of get what he's saying. He's like, oh, you can raise it another level. In the next suit, there's a different suit that's just a little bit more elegant.
Yes,
it's a subtle art.
And Jeremy Theobald, by the way, in that scene, which was amazing, and I gotta say, it was as a following fan, it was made me happy to see him again. And he by the way, he thought something. I talked to him the other day. He said something interesting. He said the Debicki Bronner relationship kind of reminded him of the bald guy and the blonde in Following. Just the idea of that hold he had over her, and he thought that was an interesting. I thought you might be interested in hearing that. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it was great to have Jerry back, just going and doing that for us. It was fun, really fun to see him again and work with him again.
Mr. Nolan, you've introduced audiences to some really fascinating narrative concepts, whether in films like Memento, Inception, even in Dunkirk, the way that your use of time. Your fans generally love when you build this challenging puzzle and your movies kind of force them to figure things out. They've become some of the most beloved and original films of our generation. But I'm often curious, like, when do you ever get clever ideas, but you have to abandon them because you can't quite figure out a story to fit them into?
I mean, yes, I suppose it's really, well, cleverness is an elusive, it's a tricky concept, because if the idea is really that clever, you could probably find a way to use it in a story. It's probably not as great as you think, and so it gets abandoned or it gets put to the back of the drawer. I mean, I think Tenet, for example, you know, the seed of that for me was always the idea of the bullet being pulled out of the wall and back into the barrel of the gun, and I have it in Memento in symbolic form instead of metaphorical form, but I always wanted to sort of find a way to make that a sort of physical reality for characters to have to deal with in a story, and that's what Tenet is, and that took me a couple of decades ultimately to sort of find that. And so it's not really so much, you know, if you come up with an interesting notion or an interesting concept, you play around with it, and it either suggests itself as a story or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, rather than throwing it away forever, sometimes I just, I stick it in a notebook somewhere. And I've tended to find that the ideas that stick are the ones with value, you know, the ones that you try and put them away and they don't quite ever go back in the drawer. They keep bugging you. Those are the things that eventually turn into something.
You know, Mr. Nolan, I'm very curious about the use of one-word titles. You know, aside from the Dark Knight trilogy and the before The Prestige, every title is Insomnia, Interstellar, Dunkirk, Memento, Following. I was just interested to know, is that a conscious choice to make in regards to having them be one word? And is that, are you trying to say something with a one-word title specifically?
No, I think it's really more about, I mean, for me, titles are very tricky to be too self-conscious about. You're looking for a way of expressing something about the film. And it, to a certain extent, it's a branding exercise on larger scale films. And so I've always gravitated towards the simplest version of something that, that gets it across. And following actually for, I think when I wrote the script, it was The Following. So we got rid of the and stripped that down. I think that was the beginning of my interest in trying to just, you know, make things as short and as pithy as possible, really. But it's all instinct at the end of the day. It's all trying to create something that that you're excited about, you're excited to share with the world.
And as we wrap up, Mr. Nolan, you know, oftentimes whenever you direct a new big cinematic spectacle that we're all excited about, we often sort of look at your work as a filmmaker and say, like, oh, what did he learn from his days on Inception or Interstellar that maybe is sort of taken to the next level here? But I'm sort of curious. I just did a rewatch of your entire filmography before today, and there are so many incredible elements in your small. It was a good time, but I'm just sort of curious. What are some lessons that you learned from, I don't want to say smaller films, but from films like Memento or Insomnia or The Prestige that you still utilize maybe for something like Tenet?
Well, I mean, I think the main thing that that the way my career has worked on the different scale of films, moving from Batman Begins, for example, to The Prestige, for me, I've been very happy with the way we made Batman Begins on a technical level with my director of photography, Wally Pfister, and Nathan Crowley, the designer on that film. But we did Prestige as a strong reaction against the production methodologies we'd had to use for Batman Begins. We wanted to be much more spontaneous, move back to a smaller form of filmmaking. For me, it was like going back to the way we made Memento, just trying to be simpler and smaller and more spontaneous. And from that film onwards, we tried to retain that that sort of core sense of freedom and spontaneity on the sets, even when the sets are bigger and bigger. And so now working with Hoyte van Hoytema on the last three films, still with Nathan Crowley and so forth, we try and create an arena for the actors and the crew to come into and then operate in a more spontaneous manner. And that's something we kind of learned on the smaller films, because I started off making films where it was, you know, me with a camera on my shoulder and a couple of actors in a room, or saying, okay, we can go shoot in this restaurant for a couple hours, just go in there and I'll put the camera up and we'll just get the scene. And over the years, the film's getting bigger and bigger, eventually you come back to that needs to be there at the core of it. It has to be about the performers. It has to be about how they interpret the words. That has to be the center of what you're doing. And so we've tried to find ways to retain that even within the big machine that is a large-scale action film.
Mr. Nolan, we're getting the one-minute wrap. Sean's going to wrap us up. I just have to ask you one simple question, something I've wanted to know since I saw the first trailer. How are you flipping a car in reverse as we're moving forward in action at the, in the same frame? How are you doing that? That's insane.
Well, you don't want to know everything about how things are made, surely, Kevin. Got to be a little bit of mystery, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Mr. Nolan, we are tremendous fans. We've been doing this podcast for 3 years. For some really odd reason, we have ended every single episode by yelling Dunkirk. When we started, we were an awards blend podcast. You were in the heat of the Oscar race. And for some reason, we just shouted Dunkirk. And it stuck, and everyone loved it. And I just, would you please do us the honor of saying Dunkirk as loudly as you would like to?
I don't really do loud, but I think, why don't you guys do it and I'll join in.
All right, that sounds great. So we'll do 3, 2, 1, Dunkirk. Ready? 3, 2, 1, Dunkirk!
You didn't commit, Chris. You didn't commit.
Yeah.
That means everything to us. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And with that, as promised, we're here to tell you guys that the Dunkirk bit at the end of every episode is over. It's come to a close. We have decided.
Explain why that is, Sean. So, I'll just say this: we've been saying Dunkirk at the end of every episode, essentially since like 2017. At the end of that year, is that when we first started the podcast?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And.
And as Sean explained in the interview, it was right during the award season. Dunkirk was one of the top contenders, and you heard him explain that all that to Christopher Nolan. We're all watching Chris Nolan's face, like seeing how he's going to react to it.
So for people at home that do like we actually had, even though like we weren't able to record the video, we just have the audio. There was video between us, so he could see us and we could see him. While we were doing this interview, which I think made it so much better.
Yeah, it was especially when you have three hosts and you have two guests. It's so much easier when they can see who they're talking to, and you can tell when someone's gonna stop talking. And it was really cool of Warner Brothers. We got to zoom in with them just like we're doing right now. But to Sean's point, like I think we said this jokingly, but it actually turned out to be a serious thing. If we ever got Nolan on the show, we would retire Dunkirk. I just don't think any of us actually thought we'd ever get Nolan on the show. So I think we were going to say Dunkirk every show forever.
And that's what it was. We painted ourselves into a corner with the bit a little bit because we were like, how much longer are we going to keep saying Dunkirk? Like it's an old movie. He has a new movie out now at this point. So he said it. And so we're going to retire it. Now, that doesn't mean we won't come up with something different to say at the end of the episodes now still. If you listen to the premium episodes, you know that we have another running bit. And maybe that means we might one day get another person to come on and
it's my favorite
and say that title. But we're going to probably need some suggestions from you guys. So if you have another thing that you'd like us to throw out or any other kind of way to end the show, help us out because we need some help creatively.
Well, it's got to be a similar scenario. So it's got to be a film of a director that we hope to get on the show.
Like Fincher.
If we get,
or Spielberg.
Sean. Yeah, so West Side Story.
I do have one quick question before we go. What was the inception? Why did we start saying Dunkirk?
Because it was the award season for Dunkirk, wasn't it?
But why did it become like an end of the show screamer?
Because you started screaming the word.
No, I know, but like I'm just trying to figure out. Like, I know I would say it, but how did we start to go, oh, that's going to be a bit we're going to do? Like, I don't remember that transition.
I can say, because I went back and cut them all together.
Was an amazing montage.
We should have played that for which,
I don't know. no joke. That would have been
Here's our
enough.
5 minutes. Just a montage.
No, but it was just a thing. That movie in particular, you were very passionate about people going and seeing it in the theater because you were very passionate about seeing it in the theater. And so it just started where you were saying it because it was the sign off thing. And you were just like trying to last thing, remind people, go see Dunkirk. And then it just became a thing that we kept saying. I think it eventually became a thing that the audience started saying back to us.
Yeah.
And so then it became bigger than Dunkirk. And it was just about interacting with the audience, which is what it's been for years.
All the emails and the reviews would end with like Dunkirk. It was so cool.
Dunkirk.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
I don't know what they're going to say.
You know what? Whenever I hear Kevin say it now, it carries as much weight. Like Kevin saying Dunkirk is actually important.
Like, I forget it's a movie and not just a thing we say.
It's for sure.
I used to laugh so hard
when
Jake would counter it with Solo. He was kind of excited about Solo.
Solo name scene or something like that.
Look at his face. I love it.
Well, when we get Ron Howard on the show, we can have him say it.
Oh, he'll come on next week.
I want to add one quick.
Hey, don't knock Ron Howard.
One quick thing to the Nolan interview. So in the interview, you heard him talk about reversing the IMAX film and like getting that throwaway shot where they go out to the back of the boat and just shoot the water down. So I rewatched the film, I went and saw it again last night, and we'll get into this with the spoiler discussion. That shot is brilliant. Like, because it opens, for people who don't know what we're referring to, the opening shot of trailer number 2 is the shot that Nolan says was a throwaway shot that they just used just to see if it would work. And that shot is amazing. Like, that's a throwaway shot. filmed in reverse. It's so crazy.
I love it. He still has a lot of those independent sensibilities about him. So, all right, let's transition to news that broke over the weekend that we weren't able to address in the previous show. And listen, I know that we're super excited about Nolan and it was great getting him on the show, but we have to sort of, you know, mention the fact that we also lost an enormous talent and somebody who I still can't even process it. Like we did a video on Cinema Blend today where we just talked about the legacy of Chadwick Boseman and what he left behind at the age of 43. 43 is so young. And so obviously, you know, we lost Chadwick Boseman. He succumbed to cancer after multiple years of battling this in private and still filming all of these films that he was able to put out right up until The Five Bloods, which he worked on with Spike Lee that came out earlier this year. It's hard to even know what to say. Like you can try to put in perspective everything that he accomplished. And I hate when we single out like one particular role for an actor. But there's no way that like the legacy of what he accomplished with Black Panther and the difference that made in the lives of multiple people, it can't be overstated. That movie, that character, the introduction of his character, the way that he personified Black Panther was a cultural touchstone for that we've lived through at this point now. Like that movie, the fact that it's the highest grossing Marvel domestic film, the fact that they created the culture of Wakanda, the environment of Wakanda, and that it immediately rose to the standards of the Avengers is nothing short of remarkable. The fact that the Wakanda Forever salute was just something that permeated our culture. He was the perfect person for that part, but that doesn't even touch on him playing Jackie Robinson, him playing James Brown, him playing Thurgood Marshall. Like he chose roles over the course of his career that spoke to the impact that he wanted to have. I don't think he has got a paycheck role on his entire resume. And I love that he was also starting to sort of branch out and get behind vehicles like 21 Bridges that he wanted to executive produce with the Russos and really turn into leading vehicles. So what I lament more than anything with the loss of Chadwick Boseman is just the number of stories that we still would have got from him. Because I don't think that he had yet been completely challenged. You know, like I think about other director pairings, other filmmakers beyond Ryan Coogler, beyond the Russos that would have wanted to work with him and gotten the opportunity to. And it's just devastating to see that life sort of cut short. So how are you guys feeling about the loss of Chadwick Boseman and his contributions in this short time?
Yeah, similar to in a lot of ways how I felt when we learned about the passing of Heath Ledger. You talked about, you know, the word that I keep hearing that really for me is the gut punch is the word potential. Because when an older actor passes away, you know, it's obviously it's a bummer because of all the memories that we had with that particular person. But when someone like Chadwick Boseman passes away, it's heartbreaking because of the memories we didn't get to have. Like he was an actor who not only was not going anywhere, I would say an Oscar was in his path. Like if you were to tell, like he was going to win an Oscar within the next 20, like I would not have surprised me in the least bit.
Sure.
I agree with you. The amount of stories, you know, I think once he sort of cleared the Black Panther role, he was probably, you know, going to be on every director's short list for, you know, for a variety of different roles that we could have seen things. And then also, too, you know, we have to remember just what the role of Black Panther meant for honestly, for a lot of people that don't look like, you know, like for so many young black children out there who had a mainstream superhero who represented them. Like the four of us on this show have plenty of superheroes and have grown up with cinematic superheroes who look like us.
Yep.
So for an entire community, I did a live shot at a local theater here in Chicago where an entire elementary school was bussed in so that they could see Black Panther and they could see themselves and they could see their history and they could see their culture represented on the big screen. And I'm getting chills talking about it. I found myself getting like choked up talking to these kids as they were telling me like how great, like they were holding their Black Panther toys. And that's where you realize that he didn't just play a superhero for us to go and like, you know, for the four of us to be able to like talk about it and have a good time. And it's a great Marvel movie. I mean, it is we just made this reference earlier. It wasn't a movie. It was a movement. It represented something that was bigger than all of us. And, you know, when the thing that, you know, so many of his co-stars and even Ryan Coogler put out really powerful statements about this passing. But the ones that really stuck a knife in my heart was, did you guys see the images of the young kids who created funerals with their toys?
Yeah.
With the, like, that's, yeah. that's yeah. what got me. And that's yeah. really what drove home what we lost. We lost mm-hmm. something that was bigger than a guy that was a superhero in the movies. We lost something much bigger than that.
I think what amazes me about the situation is, you know, as heartbreaking as it is, it's one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen. And I say that because he's diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in 2016. And instead of just stopping working and just spending time with his family over these next 4 years, which I'm sure he did, he decided to go out and make a mark, which he already was doing, but so much more so with the projects that he took on even later. And Black Panther being one of them, you think about the fact that he shot Black Panther, trained for Black Panther, did all the press for Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame, Defy Bloods. You're talking about some of the most important and biggest films of our time. And to do that while you're dying is genuinely one of the most selfless and most, I just think it's such a beautiful thing that he did. He, you know, the idea of touching the world through a film like Black Panther and not telling anybody what you're going through, just so that you can leave behind and make an important change on this world mm-hmm. is something that I cannot not see that. Now, I look at him as something even bigger than an actor, as somebody who genuinely wanted to make a difference in this world. And he didn't have to do that. He didn't mm-hmm. have to do any of that. He just could have stopped. And to me, that's what I find interesting about this, is as heartbreaking as it is. And I've interviewed him numerous times, multiple times during that period. I sat across from him for Captain America Civil War. You know, I interviewed him for Black Panther, 21 Bridges. All those are all moments when he was going through stage 3 colon cancer. I don't know when exactly it turns into stage 4, which I know eventually is the, you know, his passing. But I find that to be so incredibly interesting. And I'll never forget this. And I went to the Infinity War premiere with Lauren, and this was right after Black Panther. And you guys have been to these movie premieres, like, with, and they're all, and the actors specifically are sectioned off in their mm-hmm. own areas. And generally there's a security guard that blocks the area for like friends and family. But like anybody else who's gone to the movie, you kind of stay out in the bar area. And I remember going over, and like Lauren and I were just walking by, and like, I saw him, and I said something to someone who was with him. And they're like, oh yeah, come on in, come on in. So I went in, and like, he was like, again, he didn't have to do this. This is like, this is right after Infinity War. Black Panther had come out. Guy's one of the biggest stars on the planet. Took a few minutes and talked to us about the film. This is right after Black Panther got dusted in the film, right? So
yeah.
we're just all flabbergasted by what just happened movie.
Yeah.
And just to have a moment with him and take a picture with him, and for him to smile for that picture and actually want to say hi and talk. Again, I'm not saying that that is like an indicator that he was a great individual, but it's the little things that he did like that, knowing what he was going through, that just fascinate me. Because mm-hmm. a lot of people get down and depressed and anxiety filled about elements in their lives. And that can lead to people, you know, you not being a nice individual or shutting people out or whatever your depression or whatever leads you down a path. But for you to get that diagnosis and then say to yourself, I mean, I'm not, I don't know for sure if he said this to himself, but I'm going to go out and do the best I can to be the mm-hmm. best person I can be and leave behind this legacy. That being said, aside from all that, one of the greatest actors of our generation. Like, I genuinely believe that. To take on roles like James Brown and, you know, and Jackie Robinson.
You
have to understand, I mean, you guys understand, but the beauty of what he did with those roles is they were not imitations or impersonations. They were interpretations. And I remember talking to him for 42, and he had this beautiful way of describing becoming Jackie Robinson, about when you become the character, it's like the spirit of the character is moving in and out of you, essentially. And that's how he viewed this material. Like he wanted to honor these people so much that he wanted to get it right, but he didn't want to do an impersonation of what, you know, that person would sound like. This dude cared about his work, and you could see that in the work. You could see it in the way he talked about the work. But at the same time, you know, to be going through that and not, I mean, Ryan Coogler didn't even know. His Black Panther director didn't even know that he...
That's remarkable.
Isn't that... I mean, it's incredible
That's
to me.
That's remarkable.
So I'll end just by saying that I found this story, as heartbreaking as it was, to be a truly inspiring story, because Michael B. Jordan said it in his post, like, it makes you want to change the way you live your life. It really does, because as somebody, you know, on my end, we all get down about things, and it's like, you know, we just got to push through. And if he can do it, and he did it for those 4 years, anybody can do it. And last thing I'll say is the Five Bloods ending on that film, I found to be very poetic. That character, the way the character is designed in the story, he's the one who saves his men. He's the one who leaves the legacy. The entire film is about finding his remains, the character's remains. I just feel like the projects he chose to do after his diagnosis, it's interesting to look at them and why he did them. They all have something very important to say. And I just, that's what I want to say about him.
Even more so. Yeah. Brilliant choice by Spike to keep Chadwick in the flashback and have him work with the older actors too. Right. It's in hindsight, such an amazing tribute to his legacy. So, I mean, we'll continue to hear these beautiful tributes from the people who worked with Chadwick, the directors and the actors who collaborated with them. And I love that ABC did Black Panther as a special showing on Sunday. I would love if that's an annual thing.
I watched it again.
It'd be really cool.
The other night.
Yeah.
It has a different weight to it. Yeah.
It was my first movie back when I went to the theaters in a very unusual turn of events, because my Tenet screening was postponed and the theater owner, to kill time, because I honestly had hours to kill while I waited for the Tenet thing to be done. He's like, well, here's a bunch of movies that we're going to be playing all day. What do you want to go see? I'll just feed you tickets. And as soon as he said Black Panther, I said, oh my God, I'll go watch Black Panther again. That's phenomenal. And again, having no clue that this was about to happen, and just to have that movie hit as hard as it does again, because it's fantastic. It was great. So, speaking of returning to theaters, so let's get into some of our stories about experiencing going back to theaters. And again, I can't emphasize this enough, that we are preaching safety above all else for anybody who is choosing to go back. And listen, this is the difficult conversation, because the people who say to us that they're not ready and it's not worth the risk, you might be right. You're right. You know, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. But then we're also hearing from other people who are giving it a chance, and they're running into different situations, and sometimes it's working out really well, and sometimes it's still a little bit sketchy because of the other patrons that are involved. I went to go see New Mutants on Friday at a public screening. We needed to review it for Cinema Blend. We were going to do coverage on it. And so I went to a 120 screening in South Carolina, and felt very, very safe. Everyone was wearing masks. Employees were wearing masks. The majority of the patrons, there was probably about 15 people in a pretty large auditorium. One guy didn't have a mask on because he was eating popcorn. And I guess that Regal's policy is if you're eating a concession food, you're able to take your mask off. Yeah, Gabe is making this face because...
But what if it takes you the entire movie?
Then you just don't wear a mask the entire time.
It's a personal responsibility. I had popcorn last night. I kept my mask on. You slide it down, eat your popcorn for the amount of time you're going to eat it, 1 or 2 minutes, whatever it is, slide it back up.
And there's even, isn't there a way to like wear the mask and kind of just like.
No, it's policy. You can actually do that.
Yeah. One thing that happened to me though, because I walked into the lobby and there was nobody there to take tickets. It was 1:20. It was probably one of the first screenings of the day. The staff was still sort of figuring out what was going on. So I walked over to the concession stand. There were a couple of employees sort of gathered up, and I said, hi, where can I check in? Literally, I could have just walked in and walked right into the auditorium and nobody would have stopped me for anything. But I had the ticket on my phone. So I was like, oh, where can I check this in? And the guy goes, oh, come on down here. I'll do it for you. And I walked down to the register and I showed him my phone and the thing. He goes, oh, yeah, I'll scan that for you. And he took my phone from me. And he's holding it and like waving around the thing. And as he's doing it, I'm like, you shouldn't be touching my phone. Like, why are you touching my phone with your hands all over everything? And So they're not there yet, 100%, but they're figuring out as they go. But I felt safe the entire time. I really didn't feel like I was at any kind of risk. And I don't know. As it gets on in the process and more people start braving it and the crowds get bigger, that I might feel differently. But
as it gets on, they've only had 6 months to get their shit together.
No, I more mean that when more people go and it's a little bit harder to social distance in an auditorium. Because Gabe, you weigh in here. You texted us right before you went and saw Tenet, and you said that there are people sitting right near you with no masks on.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far into this because this is not really our show. But yeah, I wasn't super comfortable. I went because Tenet is a very particular movie and I have a particular job and it's going to get ruined for me. And so it motivated me enough to, and I wanted to see firsthand, like, hey, how are they doing it around here? You know, I live in St. Louis, but it's still Missouri in the Midwest. And sometimes we make really poor decisions. For the most part, it was fine. There was a gentleman who was nearest to me. He was still, you know, several feet away from me, maybe seven or eight feet away from me. I'm not a medical professional. I'm not a scientist. I don't know how these things work. But it was still enough to make me feel uncomfortable that he sat the whole movie not wearing a mask. Made me not really want to go back. Just for the risk alone, just wasn't really worth it.
Till Dune comes
everyone
along.
Everyone has their yeah. I didn't feel very smart. Let's just say that. I didn't feel like I was making the smartest decision I could. Still enjoyed
it. But Kev, you felt pretty safe when you went.
Yeah, I mean, listen. We've had a lot of different discussions on this show about movie theaters reopening, Tenet is going to reopen or not reopen. And for me, so I've seen Tenet twice. Once was in a press screening, but I went to the same theater to see it again with a public screening. It was sold out and it was socially distanced. I had popcorn. Everyone had a mask on. I didn't have any issues with people not wearing masks. Now, going back to what Sean was saying, it's all based on your personal preference. If you're comfortable going, that's fine. If you're not, there's no judgment whatsoever. You do whatever makes you comfortable. And I think I told you guys this already, but my mom and dad came to visit me a couple weeks ago. I had tickets. I was going to go see the Inception 20th anniversary. My mom texted me beforehand and said, "Hey, Kevin, do you mind not going to that movie before we come? Because we're a little worried." I said, "Not a problem. Sure. I mean, I'm not going to go visit my grandmother after I go see Tenet." You know what I mean? So I felt completely safe, but I also understand and completely understand anybody who does not feel safe. I have no judgment.
So I bring up New Mutants to point out the fact that it made $7 million over its debut.
Some of that
weekend,
was mine.
9.9.
I didn't even go.
9.9. Oh, you bought a ticket and then didn't go?
Well, I was interviewing the cast and the tickets went on sale. I thought it'd be cool to buy a ticket because it was like the first time I bought a movie ticket in forever. And I bought two tickets for Lauren and I to go the other night, and I just couldn't go for personal reasons. So instead of canceling it because I felt guilty, because I told the cast I bought the tickets, I just kept them. And I just didn't refund them. I just felt bad.
Well, I'm going to tell you that you were spared because I went and it's not good.
Oh.
And again, we kind of could have predicted this. It's a movie that had been delayed multiple times. If it was truly great, Disney and Fox probably would have figured out some way to get it out there. Here's what I'll say in a really quick review. It doesn't commit to anything. If it thinks it's supposed to be the first mutant superhero horror movie, it's not scary in the least bit. It's not scary. It'd be scary if you've never seen a horror movie at all in your life. But it's like watered down PG jump scares. Not even that. Like, they're not even that effective. As a superhero movie, it has like no action whatsoever at all. It's just watered down. It's just bland. It's totally forgettable. And I hate that we paid as much attention to this movie as we did because of all of the circumstances surrounding it.
I do feel bad for what happened to that film, to be honest with you.
I do too.
I feel bad for what happened, what Josh Boone had to go through with that and the idea of the film getting caught up in the merger. And it's got to be rough for that to happen as a filmmaker. Sad.
Absolutely.
It is sad.
Because I feel bad if the movie were good.
I still feel bad. Regardless of the movie being bad or good, a lot of work went into it. A lot of passion went into it. And I just don't. Do you think this is his cut? Do you think this is the cut he wanted?
No,
release
no, no.
Are we starting? Are we starting a new one?
It's my next book. Release the Boone Cut. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because I really did try to judge it from the perspective of what if this movie came out when it was supposed to, like in 2017. But even by the standards of the X-Men movies that were coming out then, it's boring. It's lame. Like it's really like. 2017, we'd seen Logan, we'd seen X-Men Days of Future Past, we'd seen them challenge the genre and elevate mutant stories, and this is like a weird, it felt like a movie that was made in the early 1990s before the studios had even figured out how to really do superhero movies yet. So I don't get it. And the cast is real. The cast is perfect. They're really great for the characters. The movie just does nothing for them. And so I think Josh Boone sort of let them down with the script. It's almost like if you got these characters, but then you didn't do anything to take advantage of what makes them special. You never really see their powers on display. The way that they interact isn't special. It's just disappointing. All of it's disappointing.
That's a bummer.
So, hey, New Mutants, probably coming to HBO Max sometime soon. Speaking of coming to streaming, on Friday, September 4th, you guys are going to be able to see the live action Mulan because Disney's putting it on their Disney Plus. You probably know this by now, but it's going to cost you a little bit extra to see it. Even if you have your Disney Plus subscription, it's going to be an additional $29.99, essentially $30 to rent live action Mulan. We have screener links, and I'm watching it tonight. Kev, I think you're watching it tonight.
Everyone's
watching it?
I've never seen the original Mulan, so we're watching the first one right after the show, animated, and then I'm going to watch the new one.
You got a Donnie Osmond treat in store for you, sir.
I heard Eddie Murphy's great in it. I've never seen it.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah.
It's great. It was sort of the end of that great Disney renaissance that was maybe like a decade long that began in the late 80s. And I'd say, Sean, like around, like not just hand drawn, but like great. Like it was like Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Lion King and Aladdin. And I'd say Mulan was sort of like the end.
Wait, then that's interesting because that's all the live action ones that we've basically gotten just now, except Little Mermaid.
Which is
coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, which they are doing. So we will have reviews to the new Mulan in the next episode. I'm sure we'll bring it up at that point. Some people have been tweeting about it and saying that they've been pretty impressed by it so far. So we just didn't get a chance to see it beforehand because we were so busy with Tenet. And so now we're going to dive into spoilers for Tenet for the next few minutes. And that means if you haven't yet seen it and you came to listen to the Nolan, jump away. We appreciate it. Move forward. If you want spoiler-free reactions to Tenet, go to last week's episode, because we have that in here. But now we're going to get into what we think works and didn't work about Tenet, and Gabe has something he would like to add.
Well, and just a reminder, we've made a commitment that moving forward, we're going to keep spoilery stuff and jokes and references to Tenet contained to this spoiler-free segment, and then moving forward for anybody, you know, who has no idea when a theater is going to open up or when they're going to feel safe to go. You can continue to listen to the show for the weeks to come and have fun with us and not worry about us dropping a Pattinson reference that blows the mind off of the whole thing or something.
Exactly.
Who knows?
Okay.
So yes.
So here we go in 3, 2, 1.
Did you just flick me off?
I might have.
You had 5 fingers on your hand to choose from. It could have been number one, and you specifically chose that one.
I took that so personally.
So today I had the joy of writing a Tenet Ending Explained feature on Cinema Blend, which is why I was furiously texting Kevin, because Kevin got to go last night, and I just wanted a couple of things clarified.
I hope I was right. I'm still trying to figure it all out, but
you may or may not be. So the moment in Tenet that and Jake was saying this too right before we started, where I was fully on board with everything that was happening was when John David Washington realized that the person he was fighting in the hallway was himself. And that's when there's moments in Nolan's films when his lines sort of come together in a seamless form and you realize the story that he's been trying to tell. Now with Nolan, he's always so many steps ahead of us in the process anyway, because it's his story. But when he lets you in, nobody's better at letting you in at different points in the story.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like the Usual Suspects moment, or it's a little bit like the Sixth Sense moment. But in a Nolan film, you sometimes get four or five of those. And that moment when John David Washington realizes he was fighting himself, I was like, oh, this is just amazing. Like, I don't care how, like,
when he
what
gets
happens
sucked
with this
under
movie
the door.
Yeah. From here on out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought this is just, it's so ambitious. It's so smart. It's so intelligent. I loved every minute of that.
But,
and so it's just, it was fun doing the 2-hour conversation afterwards because I realized just how many of those moments there were. And we were all pointing them out to each other because we were like, oh, remember this? Oh, remember this? And that's what was so exciting about this movie.
And also, and the palindromes.
Yes.
I didn't realize this. I'm not smart enough to hear a word and realize it's a palindrome. That the Kenneth Branagh's last name is a palindrome for the company that was protecting the security company that was protecting the painting.
Oh, for real? That's
interesting. And the name of the painter of the painting is a palindrome for the word opera.
Is that Goya? Yeah, it was, yeah.
No, then there's a different one. Apero? Apero is the name they kept having to use.
Yeah, the guy that
sold.
Sorry.
Yeah, so Apero is a palindrome for the word opera.
Part of me feels bad for Nolan because I don't know how his brain works. Like, imagine just trying to go through a normal day as Christopher Nolan.
You guys thought I was joking for the longest time. I've been telling you guys we weren't ready for this film. I mean,
brilliant. I'm not taking away from that. But he does have the benefit of, you know, rewriting. So, sure. You know, it's not like he sat down and the first draft was this elaborate puzzle. You know, he probably spent a couple of years going, ooh, but what if it was this?
Yeah, and that, you know, especially this one in particular. Wasn't he working on this story idea for a really long time before he finally cracked it?
By the way, Sean, to your point that you made about the reverse fight, sorry, Jake, about the fight and then the reverse fight of him fighting himself. I have been watching the Tenet trailers religiously since December of 2019. Like, I have probably seen each one over 50 times. Like, Lauren will attest to this. My dad, so my parents were here 2 weeks ago, and I think it was a week ago or so, and the final trailer came out, the one with the Travis Scott song playing through, which I really like.
Yeah. Which, that trailer shows a lot of the third act.
It does.
It's a heavy third act.
But you don't know what you're watching.
Yeah, you don't know it yet.
But what's cool about that was I must have played that trailer 10 times over that weekend because it just came out that weekend.
Tenet times?
Yeah. So my dad texts me almost every day and says, hey, Kev, do you watch that Tenet trailer yet? Have you seen it yet? Like, he's like completely just messing with me. But the point I'm trying to make is I think Nolan's trailers are an extension of his movies. I think the trailers play into your expectations. And we have seen that shot in the trailer where the guy is behind the portal, comes out backwards and then goes into the fight with Nolan for almost 9 months now. And I never once had.
Isn't it cool, though, when you realize, like, I've seen something 1,000 times and I had no idea what I was seeing?
I did not. I just thought that was a random bad guy just stuck in that portal that comes out and fights him backwards. The idea that that was John David Washington the entire time is insane to me.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. I want to ask a question about that scene specifically. The first time that they get around to it and they come through the door, I have two questions about this. Robert Pattinson says, what happened here?
Hasn't happened yet.
And John Davidson, hasn't happened yet. Wouldn't Robert Pattinson know what's going on? Is that a leading question by him?
Pattinson is his character is kind of a guardian angel, I think. And as he's walking through the film, he already knows John David Washington. Now,
but he hasn't been through that moment yet.
Right. So, but Pat,
yeah, because keep in mind, he doesn't realize that that guy is John David Washington
until later.
Until he takes the helmet off and then he looks and then he tosses the helmet back. So in that moment, even he doesn't know what's about to happen.
Pattinson knows the general arc of what's going to happen with John David's character.
Because you have to look at all of their paths as linear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, but the big sort of overall point that I want to make is everyone keeps talking about how this is Nolan's Bond movie. Like, that's the big, like, that's the company line. Okay. That's what critics are using.
I didn't get a Bond feel.
But, I mean, I understand, especially because I feel like Brana's character is kind of a Bond villain in that sense.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah. I sort of quickly referenced this before Gabe had a chance to see it and then regretted saying it because I didn't want to spoil it. I think this is Nolan's Terminator movie.
Yeah.
Like, to me, this is a much closer, like, interpretation to him doing Terminator than him doing
Or Back to the Future.
If only because you send somebody back. Like, you're just hanging on the concept of sending somebody back, right?
Sure.
Sending someone from the future back.
In a way,
back.
They're sending somebody back.
It's sending someone back in order to affect a person who doesn't know in order to prevent the end of the world.
Yes.
That's Terminator.
A little bit, yeah.
It's just a lot more layered.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is.
But it's definitely a mesh of those concepts. Sure. Yeah. Still, it's still very Bond. I would say that this, with the way that it ends, this is like the Casino Royale of Craig's Bonds, in that it's like, although it begins with him getting 007 status, I would say it's more like a Bond movie in that at the end of this movie, John David Washington becomes Bond.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, at the end of this, he becomes the guy that ties up.
Apparently the one that the Bond film that he most looked at was The Spy Who Loved Me.
Okay.
Which,
oh really?
I believe I read that somewhere. I don't remember where.
See, that makes me want to go back in because I don't know the Bond movies well enough to be able to differentiate that. You know, especially the older ones.
He showed his cast Once Upon a Time in the West before they shot, from what I understand as well. Which is, there's so much structural elements that I'm just interested in knowing. But yeah, anyways, go ahead, Sean.
Here's an odd question: do you want them to make a continuation of this story?
No.
So it's I'm of two minds about this, because there is a part of me that feels like, especially what the last 5 minutes tells us, is that there are a lot more stories that need to happen / have already happened.
Yeah.
And I the thing that you and I mentioned when we were talking after we both saw it is that I really thought the film was going to go back to the opera.
I did too.
And I kind of really wanted that to happen.
But why would you need to go back to the opera?
Well, because then the movie would be a palindrome.
But it kind of is, in the sense, so in the beginning of the film in the opera, that's when Robert Pattinson's character first saves John David Washington's life.
I kind of wanted a reason to have to go back there.
Yeah.
For some
reason. Think about it structurally. It builds to a point in the moment where John David Washington goes through the timetable, the cylinder.
The portal.
What are those called? Yeah. It's a portal of some sort. Yeah. And then he goes back into the highway sequence. Mm-hmm. And then they have to go backwards into the airport heist. I get what Jake is saying, that if they go back, they should go all the way back to the beginning, which would be the opera. Full visual palindrome.
The only reason they went back to the airport is because that's where the portal was. The opera didn't have didn't have a portal in it.
Correct.
I like that they didn't, because I felt like that would have been, if they had went all the way back and it was like, ooh, John David Washington was there, it would have been cool, but it would have been
easy. On the nose.
It would have been so.
That's fair.
I think that he still achieved that sense with wherever it is that they ended up. Like, that there's still a sense of like the way that the opera house happened, and like that was like a siege and it was all this stuff. And there were the two different teams going on. Like, I think that in a way it mirrors each other without it being like so on the nose perfectly.
I agree.
So Kevin taught me something today that I didn't know.
I hope I'm right about whatever you're about to say.
Well, I think you are. It's Robert Pattinson, or it's Neil, who saves John David Washington during the opera sequence.
Yes. Yes.
I didn't remember that.
It shows the string.
That's where it shows the string.
But Sean, I'm with you. And I didn't get it on my first pass. I got it on my second pass.
I didn't get it?
Yeah.
No, there's so much going on in the opera siege, you know? Yeah. You don't even know where to pay attention. Yeah. There's so much stuff happening. And I'm like, how much of this is important? Because even in the siege, he's a member of a team that's there to do something different. And he's got to branch off with his guys to get to that person.
Which mirrors what happens at the end. Right? Yes, it does. With the two teams.
God, it's insane.
A temporal pinch.
Ugh.
It's crazy. And that's basically what I mean by
the theory that I threw out that you guys at least entertained and gave shot down pretty quickly.
I like it.
But, and granted, there's not a ton of proof. My theory was that was Robert Pattinson actually Elizabeth Debicki's son? And the thing that really that made me think that was I've only seen it once, Kevin, maybe you can confirm. The last thing, or one of the last things Pattinson says to John David Washington at the end of the film is, I'll see you at the beginning.
Yes.
And then cut to John David Washington is sitting outside the kid's school. And so I was like, oh, does that edit mean something? And then I kind of started thinking back to the whole, like, Pattinson, when they were going back toward the airport back in time, he was like he was very much taking care of DeBecky. And granted, I'm probably looking too far into this.
But
he
was David very, took more
very
care
caring. No. Yeah. And in that moment.
But he was transporting.
When that moment, when he Pattinson is the one injecting her with the stuff. Like, Pattinson's very, making sure.
I kind of love that.
When he says, I'll see you at the beginning, though, does he mean the opera siege?
No, because I think the beginning, he's implying that they've had this whole life experience together, this whole, like, friendship and partnership together. And somehow Pattinson ends up there, and now we see John David Washington becoming.
I need your help on that scene. Yeah, all right, but
Jake, he'd have to going through turnstiles and going backwards forever.
Yeah, because I think that this movie touches on a really interesting aspect of time travel, which is it doesn't happen instantly. Like, if you want to go back in time a week, you have to live a week backward.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is a really, because all of their time travel movies has been, I don't say easy, but just like, need to go back 4 years, boom, you're back 4 years. This one says, like, okay, but you have to exist 4 years going back.
Okay, so then I want to ask a question, and I don't, maybe only Kevin can answer this, Gabe, you just saw it last night too, but Kevin knew what to look out for. When John David Washington goes into the cave at the end, mm-hmm. and he encounters the locked gate.
Yes.
One of Brana's guys is on the other side of the fence. Mm-hmm. And what is he doing? What is he trying to?
He's trying to get the last piece of the algorithm, right, Gabe?
Okay, they're going to bury it.
Right. All of it.
It's all together.
Bury it. Yeah. Because then he can hit the death switch and then.
This is the part I don't remember. There was a body on that guy's side of the fence already?
No. That's Pattinson.
Pattinson's body's on the other side of the fence with John David.
Well, it's
on the bad guy's side.
He's going backwards because he gets up and gets
so,
shot.
So that is Pattinson, a different Pattinson. Down. Like, so that's the thing. We could get a sequel because we don't know what the circumstances are.
Of that,
so
that's what I want to know.
But that's why we would need a sequel in order, because we don't know why that Pattinson had to come back to that moment.
Well, here's what I think happened. Well, he would have gotten shot.
He got shot in the face.
So I think because he would the guy was shooting John David Washington. He needed him to live because he goes on to be the John Connor and set up all of this that eventually happens. So I think he gets on that helicopter, goes back, gets back in a turnstile, and then comes back in and then gets down there in order to do that.
Oh my God.
And then we've officially overthought.
When is he Batman? Is he Batman anytime soon?
He's not Batman. He's Vengeance.
So that's between then and that. He does Batman role, and then he comes back down. He's got to check his watch. He's like, oh shit, I got to be in
sorry, Riddler. I got to get going. All right, so that's our Tenet wrap up. And we will, again, like I said.
Are we good on that? Are we good on that?
I mean, take that and expand it by 2 hours. And that was, unfortunately, Gabe, I'm bummed you had to miss out on it. But that was.
It's cool, though. I will say one thing that I thought, and not to take away from John David Washington, because he is cementing himself in my mind as a brilliant actor in his own right. And after this, I'm just, same as with Pattinson, I'm just excited to see what he does next. But I'm excited to rewatch Tenet because I meant to memorize the line because I just had a giant smile on my face when he's looking up the building, he's on the phone, he's telling the guy he needs to get up there. He does a line read as Denzel Washington.
There are a couple of moments in the movie where he says lines that make me think Nolan did not write that. That's John David Washington. And when he said like the hot sauce line,
you think the hot sauce line?
That is John David Washington. And when he says those lines, he says them. I think his normal voice sounds like Denzel's.
I don't think he was doing it on purpose. He does it.
Warren looked over me and said that sounded like Denzel Washington.
Yeah. And so, like, I think those are his. I do not think Nolan wrote the hot sauce line at all.
That's cool.
I think that is John David Washington. I think Nolan might have said like, "Hey, like say something cool, say something funny," and that's what he said. And not only did he say it, he said it kind of in his normal voice, and his normal voice just so happens to sound like Denzel's voice.
The hot sauce line is my favorite line in the movie, and it really is. And I know it sounds crazy to say that, but that line is so perfectly encapsulating of the character. He's just such a badass. Yeah.
There's the other one, Sean, that you pointed out when Kenneth Branagh's guys are kind of feeling him up to make sure that he doesn't have guns or anything when he's coming to the table.
Yes.
And he says, something. So you got to buy me dinner or something first.
Buy me dinner
first. Yeah, where I come from. Yeah. They usually buy you dinner first. Yeah. And when the way he says it is in a Denzel cadence. Yeah. There's no other way to sort of put it. Yeah. But it's
such a, just because you mentioned that, Kev, it's such a a line that sticks out, and I think it was in the trailer, but I think my favorite might be Pattinson going, "Oh, don't be dramatic," and then he says, "Well, how are you going to do that?" or whatever. And he goes, "Well, that, or how big is the plane?" And he goes, "Well, that's a bit dramatic."
That's a little dramatic. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I love that.
I do want to say one thing, because my initial reaction to the film, I was at a 4.5 out of 5. And again, we're still processing it, right? So when I went to see it last night, again, more like a little bit more on the relaxed side and kind of just taking it in, I experienced something so different last night, because I already loved the film, but then the film just kind of like became something more from an emotional core for me. And I just want to shout out Elizabeth Debicki, because I think her performance in this film is so unbelievably brilliant. The way she plays that part, her on the IMAX screen, that character is iconic. That is an iconic, I think. And I think that she genuinely is one of the leads of the film as much as John David Washington is. Like, they are both so important. And what I love about this movie is that Nolan has a tendency to make colder films. And we know that. I mean, his films do leave people cold sometimes.
He gets a lot of criticism for the way he writes women, too.
But this particular film, much like Interstellar, I genuinely found myself emotionally invested in the complete story of multiple characters. I wanted resolution on all these different characters. And for me, last night's experience just solidified. It's a masterpiece, 5 out of 5. I'm going again.
Can we admit, though, that she had she has not just the worst line in the movie, but one of the worst lines I've heard in a long time that made me sort of go like,
"Which
Nolan?"
Wait, I've seen it twice and I've never cringed at one of her lines. Which one is it?
I cringed hard. Sean, any idea?
No, I don't know.
When they said something, the setup was something about this would cause everyone in the world to die. And she goes, "Even my son?"
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
I went like,
that stuck out to me.
Okay,
what
I do.
Fuck.
Yes, I do remember that line. That, you say it.
Like, if I were Pattinson's character, I'd be like, yes. Like, even
one of those
even
things,
your son.
Yeah,
yes. That's she was delirious. She had a bullet in her. Come on.
Could have just been handled with a great close up, and that's it. And she's a great enough actress to pull that off. All you needed was a close up of her reacting
that's
to that
funny.
Line, and you get.
What, now that you, once you say it, I remember hearing that line and thinking,
"Listen,
oh.
it's no Solo name scene line, but it is. You know, it's up.
You know what? Every time you knock the Solo name scene, I'm going to look back and go, even my son.
Let's transition right into our blend game for this week, which appropriately enough for the episode where we finally got Christopher Nolan to join the Real Blend podcast, we are going to play hashtag Christopher Nolan blend. And I'll go first and drop a bomb. Now, this is favorite, not best.
Favorite.
Absolute favorite. My answer can only be Batman Begins, which I think is his best
Batman
film.
Oh, really? That's not what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah. Well, I think it's his best Batman film. And I think it's one of the best superhero films I've ever seen in my entire life. You hear the terms thrown around far too often now, and you forget that they exist because of Nolan. It was grounded and it was realistic. It made me believe that this guy could become Batman. It showed you every step of the way how he isolated himself and trained, came back to the city, and used his enormous wealth to put together. It just walked you through every step, and every step was credible. How he would have access to a tumbler. And even like the tumbler, they had lines with Morgan. It's one of the best scripts ever. Like when Morgan Freeman's just like, "Oh yeah, that's an experimental military grade vehicle." And you're like, "Oh, I guess that makes sense." And he goes, you know, when he comes around to ask about spelunking, you know, like these are things that a billionaire could say to his weapons developer, and all of it fit. But what I love about Batman Begins also is that it doesn't rely on the easy villains. It uses Ra's al Ghul and Scarecrow, and you would automatically, even the way that the Robert Pattinson one is going to bring in right off the bat, you got Penguin, Catwoman, and the Riddler. Like Batman is one of the most famous rogues gallery, and Nolan was essentially like, "I don't need him. You know, just give me Liam Neeson and Cillian Murphy, and I'll make it work." But I also hold on to Batman Begins because I'll stand by the fact that the reveal at the end of that movie, and I think Jake disagrees with me, doesn't necessarily set up a sequel. It just could have been the most satisfying ending to a movie that simply says, here's the launch pad for a crime fighter in Gotham. Naturally, he's going to have a Joker eventually down the line. But in much the same way that with Joaquin Phoenix's character, okay, so we saw Bruce Wayne's parents get killed. You know, eventually those two are going to cross paths. We don't need to see it. But of course, it was so successful and made so much money and was so critically acclaimed that they convinced Nolan to come back. Now, I will almost stand by the fact that I don't know if Nolan ever wanted to do more Batman movies. You know, yes, he did a great job with The Dark Knight.
I don't think after Dark Knight he wanted to do the third one.
Oh, absolutely not. No. He definitely did not.
You can see it in the movie.
I yes. like Dark Knight Rises, dude.
No, you don't.
So
I'm just kidding.
If you lay out Nolan's entire filmography on DVD Blu-ray and you said to me, pick one to sit down and watch right now, I'm picking Batman Begins every single time because I think it is just an airtight package. I think Oldman is phenomenal as Commissioner Gordon, eventually becoming Commissioner Gordon. And I think Bale is a good Batman and the best Bruce Wayne, that we've probably seen on screen. So that's my pick. That's my pick for Christopher Nolan.
I'm going to branch off of that just because I think I know what Kevin's is. So I'm going to branch off and say that my favorite is The Dark Knight.
There you go.
And for a lot of the reasons that you say you love Batman Begins, because it realistically builds up this character. Mm. For me, the reason I love The Dark Knight is because I think it realistically breaks him down. Mm. The Dark Knight is not just my favorite superhero movie of all time. But I also think Batman himself is my favorite superhero. And I think it's easy to see your favorite superhero built up and see him win and see him celebrated. But The Dark Knight basically says, like what if he loses? Mm-hmm. And not only what if he loses, what if he loses the faith of the people he's trying to save? Mm-hmm. And I think to me, that's a much more interesting and much more complicated story. I think he pulls it off beautifully. The pacing of that, I know we talk about it a lot, how like it doesn't even really feel like it feels like Heat. That if Batman had a hand in Heat and he were playing around with it, there's nothing I can say about Ledger that hasn't already been said. Mm-hmm. But very, very similar parallels to why Batman Begins is your favorite. The creation of Batman, I like Dark Knight because it's basically the destruction of Batman.
Mm-hmm. Kev?
I feel like you guys already know the answer. I mean, it's Interstellar.
That's why I jumped in. I hope you don't mind. That's why I jumped in because I feel like
Let me ask you one quick question. Do you ever envision could Tenet surpass Interstellar?
It depends. Like again, I could watch Tenet on the fifth time, the fifth pass, it could become my favorite. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the reason Interstellar will always, I believe, have that mark is because it was the first time that I truly emotionally invested in Nolan's mm-hmm. characters. And I always, you know, again, love Memento, love Dark Knight, love Batman Begins, love Following. I emotionally invest in those characters, but I never really, there was always a certain coldness that I would leave with, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing. I never felt like the feels
I think Prestige connected with me. Like, especially Jackman's character.
Love Prestige. Again, another one that I love. But when Interstellar hit, and I always mention the McConaughey scene and watching his kids grow up over 23 years and under 4 hours of being on Miller's planet, it's the use of time that creates that immersion, that creates the emotion. It was also a science fiction film made with the heart of Kubrick, in my opinion. And Nolan would say it too, obviously, but no green screen. Front projection out the windows of these spaceships that they were, you know, whatever they designed for the film and on the gimbal and everything. But I think it was the perfect intersection of practical effects, old school filmmaking, and just genius storytelling. And the concept of Matthew McConaughey's character at the age he's at to walk in and see his daughter on her deathbed in a much older version of the character. Ellen Burstyn, I believe, plays the older version of Jessica Chastain's
character.
And it
was such a great
character.
Reveal because we had been seeing testimonials from her at the beginning of the movie and didn't even realize it was her.
It's that full,
was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant.
That's all the testimonials are.
But
I'm saying, was it a great reveal?
Oh, it was a brilliant reveal.
Who hurt you?
Yeah, I don't understand what's going on there. But
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, but Interstellar.
hey, that's my wife you're talking about.
I know Interstellar was the obvious choice for me to go with because it's the one I talk about the most. But Dunkirk is actually the one that I put on the most in my house, if that makes sense. Because Dunkirk's a 90-minute lean watch, right? It's you know, it's not that long. It's a little over 90 minutes, I believe. But that's the one I put on just to look at the visuals. Like, I'll be upstairs, like, taking, you know, cleaning the dishes or whatever, or, like, hanging out with the dogs, and I'll throw on the 4K of Dunkirk because Nolan allows his Blu-rays to have the IMAX transitions. But Interstellar, no question, favorite.
So wait, have you seen the first 10 minutes of Dunkirk or the first half hour of Dunkirk more than the entire thing?
Oh, no.
Or will you ever, like, jump to the middle?
I've seen the entirety of Dunkirk.
He tunes in for the Harry Styles part. That's
over 10 to 15 times. But, like, yes, yeah. I've watched the beginning a lot more just in passing. Yeah.
Jakey.
Quick question. At this point, Nolan's made, I believe, 11 movies, including Following. Top half or bottom half, where do you put Tenet?
Oh, top half, no question.
Top half?
Oh, it's like number four for me?
I think bottom half for me.
Bottom half?
Oh. Yeah. It's still my favorite movie of the year, but I'd still say bottom half.
Oh, I think,
Gabe?
All right, we got to get out.
I don't know if I can process
Jake, Dark Knight.
Instinctually, I haven't thought about it like this, but instinctively, I want to say top half.
Yeah.
But I haven't thought about it more than just right now.
Jake, what's a better movie? Thoughts? Dark Knight Rises or Tenet?
I think Tenet's a better movie. I think Dark Knight Rises might be easier to watch, like, casually.
Oh, you're so wrong. That's so wrong. That is a wrong statement.
Hey, one of us has a heart out, and it ain't me.
All right, so Alexander Struntz says, for his audience pick, hands down, he has to go with Interstellar for this one. Although, he says, Tenet was very cool last night, especially since I got to talk to Kevin and Lauren about it before and after the movie.
I have a picture with this guy. Wait, I'm going to show it right now. I took a picture with him so I could show you guys.
You're doing that, I'm going to say, do you have it there?
Yeah, I have it right here. Long story short, Lauren, I know you have to get out, but Lauren and I went to Tenet last night at Tyson's, at AMC and Tyson's, and when we were sitting at TGI Fridays having a drink before the movie, this guy looks at me, and he's wearing a mask. I'm not wearing a mask at this point because I'm sitting down for a drink. And he goes, the first thing he says to me is, are you Kevin from Real Blend or something like that? Like, it wasn't, hey, Kevin from Fox 5 or Kevin from The Junkies. It was Kevin from Real Blend. And it was a really cool thing to, like, have someone say that out loud. And so is him right here. So he's the gentleman. That's the guy who probably sent in.
Nice.
And that was his friend. So this gentleman didn't listen to the show, but this is the Real Blend fan.
Hey, but why not?
You're shaming him.
Not
at all.
He hadn't listened to the shows, but now he's going to, because he knows we have Nolan yet this week. So, yeah.
Yes, that's right. He knows that we have Nolan. Cool. Okay. Michelle Garrest and Ezra Cubero both say Inception. Kevin Lee says The Dark Knight. And then Casey Proctor and Brandon Pope said The Prestige. We want to thank everybody for participating this week and for celebrating Nolan's filmography. For next week, obviously, in tribute to Chadwick Boseman, we're going to play hashtag Chadwick Boseman Blend. So please let us know your picks via social media. You can use hashtag Chadwick Boseman Blend, and you can email them to us at realblend@cinemablend.com. That is where you can also send reviews for the show. And this week's review comes from Caleb Newburn, who writes, longtime listener, first time caller. Waka waka. Where's my, I need one of those.
WNBC.
I've been an avid film fan for as long as I can remember and have always enjoyed tuning into film podcasts and shows to hear different perspectives on all things related to them. I've jumped around between plenty of film podcasts over the years, but Real Blend is the only one that I continue to come back to week after week. One of my big problems with many other film discussion shows I've listened to is how cynical they can be. Most of these shows start off strong with enthusiastic hosts, and then over time, they seem to become very jaded and almost disinterested in talking about movies. So I tweeted this the other day, and I kind of mean this. Like, the Twitter in general exists to just remind me of how many people in our business just don't like movies. They just don't like movies. They find something to complain about every single time that something comes out. And I'm a cynical person and I'm a pretty jaded person and I can go to the negative very easily. But when you're constantly complaining about movies, it's exhausting. And it makes me want to ask these people, like, why are you doing this? Yeah. Like, go do something else that you like if you can't find anything to celebrate in terms of cinema. Yeah, I know, Gabe. I went off on a tangent, but that
no, you're not wrong. You're not wrong though. You're not wrong. And
it's frustrating.
You're not wrong.
Sean's been having this. Sean, this has been bubbling up inside Sean.
You're not wrong. It frustrates me too.
It gets to a point where a lot of shows seem to put more of their energy toward tearing down films and filmmakers rather than building them up. Real Blend seems to have done almost the complete opposite. Well, thank you. Yes,
we inverted the show of film.
Whether they're interviewing Quentin Tarantino or the director of a movie like Bloodshot, they always approach the interviews with a huge level of respect for the filmmakers who put years of their time and energy into creating something.
Did we interview the director of Bloodshot?
Sean did.
I did. Yeah. Yes, I did. Yeah,
review's not wrong. Every time I hear Sean do an individual interview for a guest that might not have a big name, he always approaches it very professionally, like you would with any big director.
I want to step in, not because it's polite, but while we may not have liked the movie, he was a great guest.
He was really cool. Yes. Yeah, I remember listening to it. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. He was a relatively new filmmaker who was super excited. Even after 2 years of doing the show, the guys always seem so genuine and excited about the fact that they get to talk about movies with their best friends. The arguments they have, although sometimes very heated, are clearly coming from a place of love for movies and respect for their fellow hosts. There isn't a hint of cynicism in sight, and in a world that's full of it, each episode is a breath of fresh air. All of the previously mentioned thoughts were confirmed to me a little over a year ago when I ran into Kevin at the AT&T Game of Thrones prop-up exhibit in Chicago. Much to our surprise, Kathleen Kennedy dropped in on our conversation, and we had a chance to chat with her for a few minutes while she took pictures next to the Iron Throne. All of this is true. This is a crazy story.
The world has changed.
As a big Star Wars and Real Blend fan, the whole experience was really surreal for me, and Kevin if not more excited about the whole situation. His love for film really shined through that day, and it just proved to me how genuine their passion for what they do is. We don't have time to break down that whole story, but that story was insane.
It's in a past episode. Somewhere around Star Wars Celebration.
April something.
I think we talk about it in the episode where we talk about the Game of Thrones finale, because that happened when we were all watching Game of Thrones.
Excellent. That's why she was there, because she was getting a picture at the throne, because remember, they were getting ready to make a Star Wars trilogy with the Game of Thrones guys. Yeah.
Until they're not.
Yeah.
she hadn't fired
After
them
she
yet.
Watched season 8, she was like, no. She didn't say that for real. I'm just kidding. But yeah.
So thank you very much for that review. That was a fantastic review and a really great deep dive into a tremendous memory for this show. Real Blend Premium. If you guys want to subscribe to Real Blend Premium, you can go to bit.ly/RealBlend Premium. If you're not a subscriber, you missed Bathroom Blend this past week. And for next week, we're going to be telling our best junket interviews and our worst junket interviews from our history of doing this. So until next week, when we're all back together, you can follow us on social media at Jake's Takes, at Kevin McCarthy TV, and at Sean_O'Connell. Please drop us a review on iTunes. And tune in when we are back. Now, listen, we're not going to have Nolan next week.
Not with that attitude.
So it'll be a little bit of a calm down. I don't know. What do we do now at this point?
I want to put something in the universe. Hoyta Van Hoytema on our show.
Yeah, we could probably make that happen.
I mean, it's not Nolan.
It still will be.
I mean, it's a great gift.
Awesome. He shot Dunkirk. Yeah. I mean, come on. Tenet.
Wally Pfister would be cooler.
I mean, but Hoyta shot Interstellar, Dunkirk, and Tenet.
I'm not knocking him.
No, I was kidding.
All right. So until next week, Gone Girl.
Revenge of the Jedi.
Revenge?
I don't know. That's just the poster. It's sitting in front of me.
Oh, that's right.
I'm trying to get Fincher on the show. Zodiac.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.